so excited because to me, and Jan Holmes, is it the 10th year? Am I?
10th. Unbelievable, isn't it? Yes.
It's hard for me to believe. The UniFM Film Festival, I think really one of the best film festivals.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, well, of course, it's by women, about women. So I'm a little biased. So Jan is here, and also Diane Mason, well-known filmmaker, artiste in our area.
And, oh, Mary, thank you.
And Diane, you help select a lot of these films.
Yes. I do.
And we just talked to Arnie Arneson. You probably didn't hear much of that interview, but she ended up at a music conference of all places in Paris with her musical dead ear. But you actually celebrated the inauguration of Barack Obama with Penguins.
Well, actually, I celebrated the election.
Oh, right. I was there.
I was there on election. I was in Antarctica on election day. Not their election day. They don't have one, but our election day, the U.S. election day, yes.
You mean the Penguins don't elect a president? Not,
well, see, now that's up, open to interpretation now, because I observed some interesting behaviors that might mean that we have some more support than we think.
Well, as usual, you know, I love your films, really. And, you know, that Mother's Day.
I bet the Penguins would support the repeal of the global gag rule, too.
Well, yes, but that's already been done. So they're going to have to work on equal pay for women.
The problem with penguins is hard to figure out which is the male and which is the female, even the scientists. They have to wait till they mate because they really all do look alike. But I was told that they can tell, you know, if once they're mating, they can tell which is which.
But equal pay and stuff like that are universally good for everybody.
This is true.
Not just women.
So. Yeah.
Okay, Jan Holmes and Diane Mason. I think the lineup this year is just extraordinary, and I like the way you've done it, January 30th and 31st. So if you have already, the pre-Super Bowl is entirely too much, you know, and particularly with husbands and, you know, boyfriends, whatever, you know, that they've got to know every player, hurt, whatever. You can go and watch films, and you can still be available to watch the Super Bowl Sunday if that's your thing.
Right.
And did you choose it kind of with that in mind, that this is, I think, a really good time to get our licks into some really good films?
Yeah, actually, and it was probably a time that we could easily get a theater, too, because that's always a struggle for us to find a location. And we figured no movie company is going to be coming out with a new film on Super Bowl weekend, so we could probably get a theater that weekend.
Well, now, the diversity this year. I mean, they're going to see Penguins. They also, they're going to see Muskrat Skinners.
Yes.
And Miss Outdoorsy elected. But also, you've got Iraqi women. You've got this fabulous film about this Iranian situation where the man is taking took his fifth wife. I mean, The Gamut and Love Lived on Death Row. You've got Tibetan Nuns, Buddhist Nuns.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, I know our world shrinks kind of before our eyes, but it's breathtaking.
I mean, it is. I think we have 9 countries, films, you know, representing 9 countries out of the 16 films, including the U.S., of course, and it really is. It is an amazing diversity. And there is some, as you said, some lighthearted, like the Muskrat film, which takes place on a small town in the Chesapeake and about a beauty. And it's meant to be lighthearted, but they really do capture some, she really does capture some, really interesting aspects of that town. And it's about, there's an annual, which actually, it's actually the 50th annual beauty pageant, teenage beauty pageant. And then they have the beauty pageant. It's very, you know, this is a big tradition in the town, a big deal. After the pageant, on the same stage, they have a muskrat skinning contest.
Yeah, I thought we should have given a PETA alert there.
Yeah.
Well, I think if people can, they'll know by reading it, you know, because there is, it's graphic,
but it's
kind of
very
funny.
Minimal.
Yeah.
And you really, if you know anything about skinning, you would hardly even know, that's an animal, you know. But I mean, really, it's just kind of amazing.
I thought the film was beautifully done also technically, and the cinematography is really good. The way that the filmmaker captures the people in the town. And I mean, I think this is true of all of our films. Like you mentioned, the film in Tibet. The cinematography in that is just amazing. It's just exquisite. And the story is great, too, of these young women coming to the monastery.
You know, we were lucky enough to meet Barry Pearlman. She was in the studio talking about that film.
Oh, great.
And she's going to be at discussion after the film.
Right, she's coming to the festival.
Mm-hmm. And that is, it's just an amazing film. And the whole story behind that, how Rinpoche realized that he had this vision, he had to bring women, had to do this for women in the area. And then you follow it. But I thought one of the most amazing thing when this woman, you know, is up in this cave, and we literally see the box that she meditates in. I mean, we're talking weeks and years.
Yeah.
I mean, visuals like this, you just, this is what film really can bring.
Oh, I think so, yeah. too. I think so, too. This is just, and that the scenery there is beautiful. And it's a story. I mean, these young women, a lot of them, you know, going into the monastery at 13 and 14 years old, and partly because life in the village, I mean, what the promise of their lives in the village as women is, you know, to milk yaks. I mean, it really, there isn't a lot for them. Yeah. And they come to the monastery, not necessarily as an escape, but it really is a very inviting way of life. But they're sitting down and meditating all day, every day for days and days and days at 13 and 14 years old in these meditation boxes.
But they also work hard, yeah. and they have so much fun. But really, I remember most vividly from Barry when she was saying that, well, actually, in that aspect, that the yaks are worth more than the women. And so, you know, it's not unlike the Middle Ages when a lot of women, you know, didn't have a lot of choices, and so they went to the monastery.
Yes.
You know, because actually they at least had a little freedom and a little chance to use their mind, and I thought, wow. You know, I mean, it's just stunning, and it's so beautiful. You're absolutely right. And then the same day we had...
It was also interesting to see that she, I think, came out of a Jewish background herself.
Yes.
But became Buddhist and started going up to this Buddhist retreat in upstate New York. And that's where she made the contact, and as a filmmaker was invited to go over and make this film of this monastery, which had never been filmed.
No, it hadn't. And it really took a really special connection that she had. I really look forward to talking to her myself and learning about that connection, because that's not every day that someone, you know, would be invited in like that.
And I particularly don't want to give it away, but I hope somebody asked after the movie, you know, because there's quite a bit of conversation, you know, between this great woman in the cave, because she is really, you know, the endowed one, so to speak. And what she found out actually later with a little better translation, what she was really saying to her.
We'll ask if no one does.
And I'll just leave you hanging.
It's worth asking.
It's worth asking to see really what she was saying to Barry. It is so great. But another film, Linda Booker's Love Found,
Lived
in Death Row.
Yes.
That movie, I don't know when I've been much more blown away by a movie and the whole sense of redemption, what that means.
Yes. Reconciliation.
Wow. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And it will absolutely keep, you know, people gripped. And let's give some time so they can have some idea when some of these are being shown. Now, I think that one is going to be on Saturday.
Right, 12:45.
At 12:45.
Thank you, by the way, because you were responsible for us hearing about that film.
Yes.
You sent that to us.
Yeah.
Or sent me the title, and I found the film. And that's how we get so many of our good films, is from people telling us about them.
Yeah.
But thank you. So just an aside, not to...
Well, I was just so amazed by that. I really was in every way. And just a real quick synopsis of that, actually, it's an absolutely tragic story in which a father murders the mother, and they have four kids, and the oldest boy actually sees it. And so then he is found guilty. He is, you know, condemned to be executed, but then the whole legal process that takes a little while. And so then by the time we really come into the movie, the children have grown up. And it's absolutely fascinating, because each of them have decided independently that they have to resolve this, that, you know, they have to be able to move on, and to be move on, they have to talk and resolve this with their father. And this is really what you're watching. And I don't want to give it away what happens, because he's on death row. And it is just, it is a movie that I think that one really needs to see, thinking about capital punishment, but also love. And, it just blew me away.
I get goosebumps every time I think about that film. It just, I literally do. I get chills running up and down my arms. Yeah. It's such a beautiful story of, and you used the right word, redemption.
Reconciliation.
Reconciliation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it
reminded
raises,
me yeah. of the reconciliation process in South Africa when I saw the film. Yes.
And in the second hour, Ruth Cowan is going to be talking to us. And
yes.
she's been so involved, you know, with her background with South African, you know, the development into constitutional legal law and women in that process. And so we'll have to bring that up with her because that hopefully will be live via phone.
Oh, good. Yes.
And then we're going to...
Let me, before we leave the two films, share with the listeners that... As we mentioned, and some of you I'm sure remember, we interviewed Barry Perlman, who did Daughters of Wisdom about the Buddhist monastery, and we interviewed Linda Booker, who did Love Lived on Death Row, back on April 19th. If you go to WMNF.org and click on the weekly schedule and then click on the women's show, you can scroll down to that date, April 19th, 2008, and you can hear those two interviews. And it's... It would be a great introduction and probably compel you to go down and see the two films.
Well, they are amazing. Both of them are very different. But another movie, and I think it's going to end your festival, Four of a Kind by Fiona Cochrane, the Australian film. I like Australian films, so any Australian film will catch my attention. And I was lucky enough to catch up with this woman.
You were?
Yes,
that's
I was.
Great,
and we figured out the time difference, you know, so I interviewed her at night. So, but anyway, she is really worth it. She's a typical Australian in the sense of cryptic, boom, you know. And she just happens to be a doctor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she's practicing medicine. She doesn't just have a medical degree. She does that in addition to making films. And so Fiona Cochrane, and that's going to be shown 7:15 on Saturday, January 31st. And in case we haven't mentioned it, all of these are going to be shown at the Hollywood 20 in Sarasota.
Yes.
You know. Okay. So let's give a real quick listen to this, Fiona Cochrane. Tell me a little bit about Fiona Cochrane. I mean, I noticed I was stunned at the work you have done, all the work you have put out. And so what interested you in this particular presentation?
Look, I guess for me, I've done a mixture of a lot of documentaries and dramas. And I was, and I guess being a middle-aged female now, I get a bit sick of not having and not seeing a lot of real and reasonable images of women up on screen. If you look at some of the actors in the film, two of them rarely work these days because there's just not enough decent roles for middle-aged women apart from sort of nice mothers most of the time. So I really liked the idea, you know, the script when I read and you had these very... interesting characters, as you say, and particularly sort of middle-aged women doing things other than, not that there's anything wrong with being a mother, and I'm one too, but being able to be something else as well.
Yeah, I was really fascinated because they're different. They are very different, but yet they all share the same commonality, you know, of the separation of their lives. And I just found the acting so powerful. And I think I was so fascinated when I found out that you actually have a medical degree.
Yes, I do. And in fact, funnily enough, Helen Collins has been a patient of mine for 20 years, which is how she came to give me the play. So, yeah, I've known Helen for a long time and we just started doing it together.
So you not only have a medical degree, but you actually practice medicine in addition to your filmmaking.
Yes, I do, because particularly working in the low-budget film industry, which I do, and this is an extremely low-budget film, I have to survive financially. but I actually also enjoy doing it part-time. I shouldn't say that it is not purely a financial thing. I actually enjoy doing it part-time a lot, and I've done it, you know, over the years through the filmmaking and just take time off when I'm doing filmmaking and can't continue it. So, yeah, that's been, quite a big part of Helen and my relationship over the years. And so she told me she was doing this play and I said I'd love to have a look at it and she knew I make films and things. And, that's how it started.
Well, and I was fascinated by some of your films, Guerrilla Girls, about a basketball team, right? A fictitious basketball team.
Yep.
Yeah, and then I thought it just the pictures I saw of it, I thought looked really interesting.
Yes, again, it's very much a women's movie, that one, too, because it is women who've had a variety. It's sort of very, got very archetypal female characters who've had a variety of bad situations in their lives that they're trying to overcome, and they come together in this basketball team.
And then you have tug of war, which is tug of war a pretty big sport in Australia? I don't think it is so much here in America, but...
No, it's not. It's not a pretty big sport here either. It's one of those very weird and unusual sports, really. But it was using, actually, the tug of war. And we got onto this, you know, via a friend of mine who is a friend with someone in the team. But it was also using tug of war as a metaphor, again, for a lot of the struggles and things in their lives.
Yeah, this is what I was picking up, because I really found that the four characters you had. Number one, I thought the acting was just splendid, and I just love the way you film that. Ordinarily, I don't really like dramas filmed too much. You really kind of have a sense of what you're missing, but in this one, there was something about the claustrophobia of that, you know, office where these police inspectors doing the talking, but also of their lives in a way, even though they're very, very different. And, you know, they've got a wide range of activities. There still is this almost boxed in aspect of their lives. And I just found that such a powerful element throughout that whole film.
Well, it was intentional, but it was also the product of low-budget filmmaking, too, that we didn't have the money to do a lot else. And it was the nature of the project. And that was the other thing that in when I read the script with Helen, I had been looking for something that I could do as a very low-budget feature, and this one lent itself to that. And the main thing that I'm interested a lot of the time in films is a lot of the performance, etc. So it was one where you could, you know, work on getting the performances, but without having to have enormous budgets and have any of those sort of things as well to tell the story.
Well, and also...
I must admit, they're probably nastier characters than any of the films I've done, because they're all fairly devious and deceptive characters, but... That was interesting, too.
It really was. I don't want to give anything away, because that would take a lot away from it. But to tell me, do you have people at the end wonder about the guilt or
yes.
innocence, particularly of two?
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of debate about who did what to whom, et cetera. Yes.
Oh, it's just a marvelous whodunit. It really is. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. And the first character I thought was just so interesting, because it's just done so skillfully to watch her kind of box herself in, and you think, oh, my gosh, and you have a very different conclusion. But, you know, I thought that was so great, though. Again, those musical interludes, and I'd really love to see you on a bigger budget film, because I thought that kind of almost closed in containers almost of the four different dramas. You opened up with the music, and I thought they were a really good group. I mean...
They're a great group. They're an Australian group. Joe Camilleri has been around with a few different bands over the last... In fact, over the last 30 or 40 years, he's just had a thing here where he's put together music over several nights as a performance thing from the last 30 years. So he's been a musician here for quite some time. And it was only in post-production that we actually put it together, because they were these four intense dramas, as you know, mm-hmm. and it was, people needed a bit of a breather at the end of each. And so with the editor and I, and the editor is also the cinematographer, so who is very closely involved with the film, and he and I thought that, you know, just having a musical break, and we'd actually filmed Joe Camilleri before doing a couple of those songs live for another event, so we knew the songs, and I just went and picked ones that reflected what was going on in the drama, and fortunately he had some songs that were perfect.
Oh.
So we then just approached him and took the band into the studio to record them.
What? And that's four of a kind. And she was just, we had so much fun. She was just so fascinating. Now, unfortunately, she's not going to
no,
be coming.
No.
But I didn't know anything about it when I watched it, and, you know, most of them are documentaries, but this is a fabulous drama.
Well, it is, and we don't usually do many dramas. Sometimes we have short dramas,
yes.
But most of our festival, you know, is documentaries, and that's kind of why we put this on Saturday night too, because we thought this is a good film for, it's Saturday night, and not only it's a film festival, but also maybe people would think about just this is a kind of film you might just go to, you know, with a date on Saturday night and a drama. I mean, it seemed to fit with the Saturday night, and also as our closing film. It's a lot of fun.
It is, and it's good.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a really good whodunit.
I know, and you can, and really, there's a lot to talk about afterwards too.
Oh, that'll be so much fun. And actually, the next people we're actually going to be talking to, because I want you all of you involved in this, because in a way, it's a beautiful film too, Louisa May Alcott.
Mm-hmm. It
Who
is.
Who would have thought?
I know. It's a, you know, it's a documentary, but it's done with actors doing the parts. I mean, it's still a true documentary, but it's done with actors doing the parts of the main characters. So you have this drama, production aspect to it, which makes it fascinating. And it's just beautifully shot and beautifully produced. It's just an exquisite film. And we're premiering this, the Southeastern premiere.
And again, for people that might just have tuned in, we're talking about the UNIFEM Film Festival, which is going to be next weekend, January 29th, or 30th and 31st, down at the Hollywood 20. And it's UNIFEM. And Jan, the proceeds go...
It's for... UNIFEM is the Women's Fund at the United Nations. And last year and this year, we're giving our money to a special project called the Safe Cities Project, which is trying to make projects or women safer in Latin America. And if you watched the Guatemalan film that we're showing, you saw why we're raising this money. I just want to add that over the 10 years, we've raised $86,000 for UNIFEM projects, or the 9 years actually, during the film festival. So it's been pretty successful way to raise money.
And that Guatemalan film, was that... And, you know, I think a lot of us are aware of the problem in the Micheladoras, you know, down in Mexico, all these unsolved murders.
Yes.
But then you start to realize that, whoa, this kind of stuff is happening all over.
Yes.
You know, and the family, that was just so powerful. And let me see, now that one.
That's on Saturday morning.
Saturday at 10.
10 o'clock, yes.
Killer's Paradise.
Yes. Made by a Canadian woman. We were just talking on the way up here about all these wonderful Canadian films we're seeing.
Yeah. And Canadian, Australian, absolutely. Like Jane, Nancy Nicole.
Nancy Cole, yes.
One summer in
New Paltz.
Yes. And we were going to be talking to her hopefully about 11:30.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good.
So
yeah.
You guys can...
And why don't we, since we're at that point, give the website in case people want to check it out. And also, can they order tickets through the website?
No, but they can print out. If you go to www.throughwomenseyes.com, no apostrophe, and click on films, you'll see the description of all the films and the times. And if you click on tickets, you could just print out the ticket form and mail it in to us. For individual tickets... We sell those only in the lobby of Hollywood 20 on Main Street in Sarasota on the day of the festival, the days of the festival. But they can order passes ahead of time for 1 day, 2 day passes.
And if, because of saving room for people,